Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, August 12th, 2022. Section A. Midland gas prices down 15 cents. Midland average price of gasoline continued to fall this week, 15 cents, according to the AAA Texas Weekly Report. Midland's average price decline also continues to trail others across the region. AAA Texas reported this week that Midland is last of the seven larger metropolitan areas in West Texas, trailing other cities by 7 to 39 cents. The average in Midland was $3.66, according to the organization, and that price was not only 39 cents more than Abilene, but 7 cents higher than Odessa. The state average was $3.49, 17 cents lower than Midland, which was the same spread last week. AAA Texas reports prices are down 72 cents in Midland over the last 5 weeks. The state average has dropped by $1 during the same period. AAA Texas reported this week that national gas price average dropped below $4 per gallon overnight for the first time since March 5th. Stretcher Burks files to run for council. Amy Stretcher Burks became more vocal about Midland issues during the Nueva Vista zoning issue earlier this year, but that wasn't her entrance into politics. She, who was raised in Midland, became politically active in the Republican Party when she lived in Kansas City and Minneapolis, participating in young Republican organizations and even serving as a national delegate to the Republican Convention. She has filed to run for District 4, generally West Midland, on the Midland City Council. With current Representative Lori Blong deciding to run for mayor, she's the lone person to file for the seat. The election will take place November 8th. The sign-up period to put a name on a local ballot continues through August 22nd. After moving back to Midland with her husband, she helped form our Midland County Young Republicans Club, where she served as treasurer, and joined the Midland County Republican Women's Club, where she served as a board member. Stretcher Burks knows a thing or two about politics, and because of the Nueva Vista episode, she knows a thing or two about city government and which leaders respond, which leaders will discuss the issues with you, and which leaders will act and stand by what they say they will do. She learned that her neighbors and other residents inside District 4 want to be listened to and want a plan for future growth before it occurs. At times, they also felt defeated and unheard. That is the reason she's running for Midland City Council, not because of how someone voted on an issue, but because she wants to be the representative for a district. I plan to respond, discuss, listen, and stand by what I say I'll do. She said, "This issue inspired me to run, and I'm ready to represent District 4 and keep my focus on District 4. In terms of issues, she stated that she supports police officers and firefighters and promotes investments in critical infrastructure like roads and utilities. We all know that not everybody will agree on everything, but I believe every Midlander deserves to be heard and their views and opinions should be given due consideration by the council on any and all issues before our city. That's why I'm running." As a mother of three, I can tell you I want to keep things simple, and trust me, my platform is simple. I will listen to the citizens in District 4 and be their representative on the council. She graduated from Midland Christian, Midland College, and then Texas A&M University, is married to Dr. Jonathan Burks, who works as an orthopedic joint trauma surgeon at West Texas Orthopedics. They have three daughters. She said she's a stay-at-home mother and currently manages her family's real estate holdings. Activities include sustainer for the Junior League of Midland, member of the Lieutenant William Brewer chapter of the DAR, and her family attends Midland Bible Church. Older Midlanders struggle with internet-based society. There are senior citizens who struggle with an increasingly internet-based way of life. Whether it's business, communication, or access to information, most people take for granted the ease and efficiency that the internet provides. Still, in Midland, those who need the most assistance in their everyday lives are seemingly excluded from the streamlined, web-forward approach. Ken Wyrick, an 87-year-old Midlander who carries an oxygen tank all day every day to assist his breathing, doesn't own or know how to use a computer. His wife also has health problems that restrict her ability to leave home. "It has gotten to the point that you can't talk to anyone. You can't buy anything," he said. With the health conditions that he and his wife face, basic living essentials like buying groceries can be a burden. "We cannot join Walmart, HEB, Albertsons because of a lack of a computer to order groceries to go there and pick them up on the curb or have them delivered." He said he goes to brick-and-mortar grocery stores 2 to 3 times a week, oxygen tank in hand, to buy groceries. On-demand food delivery services like DoorDash and Uber Eats have become an increasingly popular method to order meals from local restaurants. Applications like these have the potential to be a great tool for homebound seniors, but not if they lack the technological knowledge or resources, which, according to Wyrick, was not necessary when most seniors were in the workforce. Senior Life Midland, an organization dedicated to improving the quality of life for the city's seniors, has found ways to help eliminate issues that can stem from the lack of technological resources and acknowledges that in 2022, there are obstacles that come with the inability to access the Internet. We've had in the past where some want to learn Facebook because they want to chat with friends from far away or their grandkids, but I do talk to many who are struggling, said Director Kathleen Kerwin-Haney. The COVID-19 pandemic shifted most businesses and everyday activities to the Internet, but even after the pandemic has faded, online practices remain popular. They were like, "I don't know how to get on and order groceries. I've been trying to do this for 2 hours. I have to get on the portal to make my doctor's appointment and get my prescriptions filled." Haney said she, the staff, and Senior Link's crew of volunteers are willing to assist seniors in need of Internet IQ or resources, which are a large part of the seniors they serve. Many can't afford to have Internet, don't have computers, can't afford Wi-Fi. Even if they own the necessary tools like a computer or smartphone, there can still be struggles to navigate the Internet. New and upgraded technology is constantly being implemented, which many see as a positive development, but according to Haney, the homebound seniors her organization cares for are an example of those forgotten by the ever-changing technological landscape. Many are very limited on movement and moving around the house and going over to the desk or even getting on a computer for a long period of time. Some just don't have the real capacity to learn how to do it at this point. The Internet and all its functions have the capability to assist seniors who may be homebound or have mobility troubles, but those are the very same people may have the biggest struggle in navigating the online world. FBI, we respect the rights of individuals to peacefully protest. An FBI official said the Bureau is aware of the Abolish the FBI protest Friday and that the FBI respects the rights of individuals to peacefully exercise their First Amendment rights. The response came from the El Paso Regional Office. Earlier this week, Midlander Jenny Could reported on Twitter that there will be an Abolish the FBI protest at noon today outside its Midland office, which is located at 1004 North Big Spring. "We are aware of the planned protests at the FBI resident agency," said Jeanette Harper. "The FBI respects the rights of individuals to peacefully exercise their First Amendment rights." The Midland Police Department is also aware of the protest. Cudd tweeted Wednesday that police came by to ask questions about my protest. When asked about the visit, Midland Police Department Chief Seth Herman told the paper through a text, "We try to contact organizers of such events in an effort to establish clear lines of communication and understanding of legal requirements, better than everyone going in blind." Former mayoral candidate and Midland businesswoman tweeted earlier this week that the Midland, Texas protest against this tyrannical government. She also expressed her displeasure with the FBI's raid of former President Trump's Florida home. Cudd pleaded guilty in October to one misdemeanor charge related to her participation in riots at the U.S. Capitol building as part of a plea deal with the federal government. She was sentenced to 2 months of probation and a $5,000 fine. MCSO arrests man for continuous sexual abuse of child. A 50-year-old Midland man was arrested Wednesday by the county sheriff's office for sexual abuse of a child. MCSO arrested James Edward Shirk on a warrant after investigators received information about the possible sexual assault of a child on August 10th. According to the press release, Shirk continuously sexually assaulted a child under 14 over a 2-year period. Shirk was being held Thursday at Midland County Jail on a first-degree felony charge of sexual abuse of a child, continuous, a victim under 14 years of age. Bond had not been set. Tall City Brewing Company to close summer beer series this weekend. With the fall months rolling in, Tall City Brewing Company pours its last fruity creation, celebrating its summer Agua Fresca series with Carnival de Agua Fresca from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Saturday. The brewery, which opened its doors in 2019, formed the Viva Agua Fresca Rattler series to showcase the culture and communities in West Texas. The first flavor, hibiscus and lime, dropped in April. Since then, Tall City Brewing Company added a blueberry and lime and a Pecos cantaloupe, made in partnership with the Mandujano brothers in Cayenosa. In July, General Manager Justin Sparks sat down with the Reporter-Telegram and explained the process of adding real fruit to the beer, saying the pulp and colored hue add to the flavor and authenticity of the beer. Yet the fun doesn't stop with one melon. The release of the Pecos Watermelon Fresca will commence this weekend. Other festivities include live music, food trucks, and special tappings through the day. There will also be two more surprise Viva Agua Fresca Rattlers to finish the series off with a bang. To-go options such as mixed 4-pack and a Pecos Watermelon 4-pack will be available. The Mandujano brothers will make an appearance from 7 to 9 p.m., selling fresh Pecos cantaloupes and watermelons. For more information on available taps, make sure to check out the Tall City Brewer website at tallcitybrewing.com. Funeral services for Darren Polk are scheduled for Saturday, August 13th at Mount Rose in Midland under the direction of Jackie Warner Funeral Home. Dusty Ray Land passed away on August 8th. Visitation will be 6 to 8 p.m. on Friday, August 12th at the branch at Nally Pickle and Welch. Services will be at 1 p.m. Saturday, August 13th at Greenwood Baptist Church in Midland, with burial following at Greenwood Cemetery. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Joyce Thea Lucas passed away on August 10th. A viewing will be held Friday, August 12th from 4 to 6 p.m. at Gilbreth Funeral Home. A celebration of life will be held at Evergreen Cemetery Chapel in Stanton on Saturday, August 13th at 10:30 a.m. Arrangements are under the direction of Gilbreth Funeral Home of Stanton. Judy Benton passed away on August 6th. Service for Judy will be Monday, August 15th at 1 p.m. with a viewing at 12 noon at Harkey's Funeral Home in Monahans. Carl Herzog of Driftwood passed away on August 10th. A memorial service will be August 13th at 10 a.m. in Martin County Convent Pavilion in Stanton. Richard Walling passed away on August 10th. The family will receive guests from 2 to 4 p.m. Sunday, August 14th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Graveside service will be at 3 p.m. Monday, August 15th at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, August 12th, 2022. Report: triple murderer captured. Then failed to report to halfway house, parole officer. Authorities have captured a triple murderer who failed to check in with his parole officer after being released from prison Wednesday. Jerry McCoy, whose sister, Ruby Fiesler, was one of Kenneth Venn's victims, said he received a text and email from the Texas Department of Criminal Justice informing him of the news. McCoy said he had no other details about Venn's arrest. Venn was released from prison Wednesday after serving 39 years in the July 13, 1983 deaths of Fiesler, 50, and her sons, Paul, 17, and Keith, 13. Robert Hurst, a spokesman for the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, said Venn, 68, was given 24 hours to report to a halfway house in El Paso and to his parole officer, but a warrant was issued for his arrest Thursday morning after he failed to do so. Hurst was unable to confirm the arrest prior to deadline. McCoy, who lives in St. Joe, said he and other family members also received texts and emails about the warrant Thursday morning. Quote, "I started cleaning my pistols just in case he showed up here," end quote, McCoy said. Quote, "I don't know what he'd do, but I know what I'd do," end quote. McCoy said he opted not to tell his 79-year-old sister about the situation, as she's currently in the hospital in Odessa and didn't want to upset her. He may tell her now that Venn is in custody. McCoy said Venn has been told he's not to reside in counties where the victim's family members live. Venn pleaded guilty to 3 counts of murder and was sentenced to 3 concurrent 55-year terms by Ector County District Court Judge Joe Connolly. Authorities said Venn broke into the Fiesler home on East 10th Street, beat the 3 to death as they slept with an aluminum bat, and ransacked the house to make it appear as though it had been burglarized. Ruby, a widow, worked in the Odessa High School cafeteria for 6 years prior to her death. She was survived by 3 daughters, 5 brothers, 2 sisters, her mother, and 5 grandsons. Last week, McCoy reached out to the Odessa American hoping the paper would alert Ector County residents as to Venn's release. Quote, "He's an idiot, and there's no telling what he would do if someone crossed him," end quote, McCoy, 83, said. Despite the years gone by, McCoy remains angered by the plea agreement offered to Venn. Quote, "We were told he was going to get the needle, and he didn't," end quote, McCoy said. Quote, "I can't believe they gave him a deal for 3 murders with a baseball bat. What kind of a deal is that?" End quote. He will never forgive Venn for his actions, McCoy said. Quote, "Maybe for 1, but 3? No," end quote, McCoy said. Discovering her calling. Educator finds niche as National Board Certification Coordinator. A long education career has led Kelly Stanzel to a job she's never held before. Ector County ISD Coordinator for National Board Certification. July 20th was Stanzel's year anniversary. The goal is to get as many teachers as possible to become National Board Certified. There's a cohort of 6 that is awaiting the result of their tests. Executive Director of Talent Ashley Osborne said having Stanzel on board is crucial. Quote, "Research shows that candidates seeking board certification with facilitated support are much more likely to be successful. Our teachers deserve the very best opportunity to achieve board certification. It was essential that Kelly's position, National Board Coordinator, be established to ensure the teachers of ECISD were set up for success," end quote, Osborne said in an email. Currently, Superintendent Scott Murray is the only National Board Certified teacher in the district. There are 36 teachers in the second group, and Stanzel said they were still accepting applications for Cohort 3, which also has 36. She said they would like to have at least 100 teachers in the program. Quote, "Right now we have 78 total teachers that are either almost complete or just beginning, but that 78 total teachers in the district that are at this moment participating in their journey to National Board Certification," end quote, Stanzel said. She added that she is kind of like the intermediary between, quote, "our National Board representatives and our candidates," end quote. Permian Strategic Partnership provides the funding for the 4 components and an additional support piece, the National Board Resource Center. Quote, "The National Board Resource Center is a group of people from Stanford University, and they actually provide in the fall, every other Tuesday, 7 p.m. is a Zoom meeting. And in the spring, every Tuesday at 7 p.m. is a Zoom meeting. And they present a little piece, and they send everyone into breakout rooms. And the breakout rooms would be those people that are in certificate areas," end quote, Stanzel said. That means that all the art, music, and early childhood generalists, for example, would be in their own separate, quote, breakout rooms, end quote, together. In those rooms, Stanzel said they would be able to share student work, get advice, and critiques of their writing. Quote, "National Board Certification is really about 40% of what you're doing in the classroom and 60% writing about what you're doing. That's what helps make you a reflective practitioner, is that you stop and you think and you analyze, end quote, Stanzel said. She added that the writing part has three major styles of writing. Quote, these candidates are expected to describe what they did in their classroom, so they describe and then they analyze. Successful or not successful, what does my data show, and then they have to reflect. So it's describe, analyze, and then reflect. So they have to reflect then about, end quote, what they could do differently in their next class to make it a more effective lesson for their students, Stanzel said. If there's something that didn't work, they can discard it and use another instructional strategy, she said. Stanzel added that the district provides support for the writing and testing process. Stanzel and her husband, Kip, have two grown children and one grandson. Kip Stanzel works for Lufkin Lift Solutions. Now in her 30th year in education, Stanzel has taught, been a counselor, and a principal. She also worked in the leadership department at Region 18 Education Service Center from 2014 to 16. She worked in a district with National Board Certified Teachers in Oklahoma and saw the difference it made. Quote, I think the biggest piece of this National Board journey is being that reflective practitioner. We can't just have a list of 1, 2, 3, 4, and this is what I'm going to do all day long, every day, the entire year, because that may work and it may not. You have to know your students and what your students need, end quote, Stanzel said. What she has liked about her job so far is working with teachers, visiting campuses, and conducting professional development. Quote, this summer we've had two meetings with my cohort three. Our first one was just kind of an orientation. I helped them navigate the National Board website. We had them download their standards, download their components, specific instructions, put little folders on their either on their desktop or their Google folders to place everything that they're going to need. My goal is for this cohort to be from day one, they will begin getting to know their students, and then I am in hopes that a big majority of them will have Component 2 ready for submission by the end of the first semester, and then they can begin focusing on Component 1 and studying for that in the spring. There's four components, and in our program we do Components 1 and 2 the first year, and then we do Components 3 and 4 the second year, end quote, Stanzel said. The teachers don't have to submit until mid-May, so there's time to tweak it, and the second semester they can continue tweaking and studying for the test. Quote, we are so thankful for the Permian Strategic Partnership. They are providing about $3,100 per candidate. Quote, that covers the cost of the four components and that National Board Resource Center tutoring, the Zoom meetings on Tuesday nights. The only cost to our candidates is a $75 registration fee that they have to submit to National Board electronically through National Board's website. So over the course of their 2 years through this journey, it's only going to cost them $150 total, and our Permian Strategic Partnership pays the other $3,100, end quote, Stanzel said. PSP also pays for books and printing. Having the National Board certification opportunity will help draw teachers to ECISD, she said. Once they become certified, teachers automatically receive a, quote, recognized, end quote, designation on their Texas teaching certificate, which allows them to be eligible for the teacher incentive allotment. Quote, the minimum that they will receive if they remain in the classroom and they become National Board certified, they will receive immediately $3,000. That's the minimum, end quote, Stanzel said. Then, depending on the tier the Texas Education Agency has placed their campus in, they would be eligible for up to $9,000. The higher amount would go to a teacher whose school is of lower socioeconomic status or a campus that has shown extreme improvement, for example, Stanzel said. She graduated from West Texas A&M Commerce with a double major in biology and earth science and a master's in school counseling, an additional 30 hours in the principalship, and an additional 15 hours for her superintendency from University of Texas at Tyler. She never took the superintendency test. Quote, I saw really quickly, that's not for me, end quote, Stanzel said. Osborne said Stanzel's experience lends itself to what ECISD hopes to accomplish. Quote, she understands what excellent teaching looks like, and she has supported many teachers as they seek board certification. Kelly has been able to be the go-to person for National Board. She has voraciously consumed all things National Board and has studied the program extensively herself so she can be knowledgeable and provide ECISD teachers personalized support. She is also responsive to the data and makes programmatic adjustments as needed. The National Board candidates benefit greatly from her tenacity, end quote, Osborne said. She added that the position is funded partially through ECISD's grant with the Permian Strategic Partnership. But her understanding is that when the grant is completed, the district will be completely locally fund this position. Murray, good news on the teacher front. Armed with more than 400 new teachers and a pool of 500 substitutes, Ector County ISD is raring to go for this school year. Superintendent Scott Murray said teachers from 25 countries are represented in classrooms across the district. He added that there is a member of the Human Capital Department who oversees all of the recruiting, retention, and support for those individuals. Murray said there are companies around the world that help identify teachers for districts. He added that there are teachers in the United States that teach abroad. Quote, we partner with several of these companies that recruit these teachers. These are teachers that are certified in their own countries. They have to go through a process in order to receive a visa, a work permit in our country. It's a journey for those folks, and then once they're in the United States, there are some additional requirements that teachers have to go through to continue teaching in this country year after year, end quote, Murray said. ECISD has about 2,000 teachers. Murray added there are almost 500 substitute teachers in the substitute pool. Quote, we haven't seen that number of substitute teachers in many years, but this year we have a healthy number of substitutes. So when our teachers are sick or we need to provide coverage, we're able to do that this year. Those that are interested in substitute teachers have really risen to the occasion, end quote, Murray said. He added that the district has made a, quote, significant investment in our human capital energy over the last 3 years, end quote. Quote, we've increased teacher compensation. We provide some incentives for teachers to earn more money. We're developing the professionalism of teachers in our own organization through the National Board for Professional Teaching Standards, building the quality and caliber of teachers that we have, providing leadership opportunities for teachers through opportunity culture. There are plenty of strategies and tactics that we've been able to leverage over the last 3 years. So again, kudos to our Board of Trustees for supporting that work, our human capital team for thinking creatively and innovatively to address those needs, and then specifically hiring and retaining really great teachers, end quote, Murray said. Safety and security are also top of mind. At the August 9th board workshop, a comprehensive review of the safety process and procedures in place in ECISD was provided. Murray said some of the things that are being done to keep students and staff members safe was also shared. Quote, we've added a couple of new pieces to our existing safety protocols. We have finished an audit of all of our exterior doors, so our police department has checked every single exterior door on every building in ECISD to ensure that they are fully operational, and any that we found to be defective, our maintenance team has addressed those concerns, end quote, Murray said. Quote, in addition, our school administrators have conducted more of an safety audit to make sure that the processes, systems, and components of safety that we have in place are operational, and again, any defective parts of that need to be replaced or reported so we can take care of it, end quote, he added. ECISD police will start weekly safety checks this year at every single campus and report that to the school administration and central office, quote, so we can make sure our schools are as safe as possible and those processes and systems we put in place centrally are utilized at the campus level, end quote, Murray said. Quote, we also started locking every door in the internal part of our schools, so every teacher this year will maintain a locked door for their students. We'll also be checking those on a weekly basis. It will be a little more difficult for folks walking around our campus to access our buildings and our classrooms. We want to make sure that our students and staff members are safe, end quote, he said. Every classroom door will remain locked this year, which is a new feature. They will open as students change classes, Murray said. He added that he appreciates the cooperation of parents and community members and acknowledged that these measures can be uncomfortable sometimes. Quote, but our purpose is to make sure that students and staff members remain safe at all times while they're on a school campus, end quote, Murray said. Alarm systems are in every district building. Quote, we have officers on duty 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Those alarms are constantly monitored by our police officers. Should any of those alarms trip, and sometimes they do, we dispatch one of those officers to investigate the situation at the school, end quote, Murray said. ECISD has more than 1,500 security cameras that allow them to monitor any visitor or anyone that enters a campus after hours or on weekends. Quote, we haven't hired any new officers this year. We've done a little bit of reorganizing of our police officers to be more effective and efficient with the way they are utilized, end quote, Murray said. Quote, but at this point, we have not hired any new officers. It is something that we're exploring to make sure that we have the right amount of officers to cover the students that we serve in the system, end quote. The projected number of students this year is 33,500, including students at the UTPB STEM Academy and Ector Middle School. Quote, this official count happens in October. We will gain kids every single day over the next month until about the middle of September, and then we flatline the rest of the year, end quote. Asked how they are going to keep the successful programs funded by ESSER going after the funding ends in 2 years, Murray said they will be in advocacy mode. Quote, we know that some of this work is highly effective. We've seen the results, and we will be working with our state legislature in the upcoming legislative session to provide for some of the work that we're doing so that not only ECISD, but every school district in Texas can take advantage of some of these opportunities, end quote, Murray said. Quote, we'll be working with a variety of strategies to help folks understand the importance of funding work that actually produces results, end quote. Asked if he thinks there are enough lawmakers to get on board with helping to get state funding for their districts, Murray said there are a lot of conversations around the teacher shortage in Texas right now. Quote, we had a teacher shortage in ECISD for many years, but we have been able to invest in some strategies, end quote, to help attract, retain, grow, develop, and retain teachers. Quote, our state legislature will be very interested in some of the strategies that we're using within our own organization. So our opportunity is to share those with the legislature that is right now looking for solutions to address the shortage issue in Texas. I think that we have found some potential solutions that are not only good for us, but good for some other districts in Texas as well. Our opportunity is to educate and inform our legislature so that they can make some really smart choices as it relates to teachers in the state of Texas, end quote, Murray said. MC announces Midland Young Leaders Awards. Midland College hosted the annual Midland Young Leaders Challenge with General Tommy Franks on June 15th and 16th. The two-day leadership development workshop for students entering the 12th grade culminated in an awards ceremony on the evening of June 16th at the Algie Langford Chaparral Center. Scholarships were presented to winners of several categories. Op-ed writing, Lauren Hale, Legacy High School, $1,000 scholarship. First place speech, Andres Barber Malera, Early College High School at Midland College, $2,000 scholarship. Second place speech and star leader, Sophie Sherram, Trinity Midland High School, $1,000 scholarship for speech and $3,000 scholarship for star leader award. The workshop and scholarships are made possible by funding from Midland County, Henry Foundation, and Warren Charitable Foundation. Each summer, Midland College hosts the workshop based on the four-star leadership principles developed by U.S. Army four-star general, retired Tommy Franks. Franks is a Midland native who led the attack on the Taliban in Afghanistan and the 2003 invasion of Iraq and overthrow of Saddam Hussein. The Midland workshop is coordinated by staff from Midland ISD and from the General Tommy Franks Leadership Institute and Museum in Hobart, Oklahoma. Quote, it's an honor for MC to host the Midland Young Leaders Challenge, end quote, MC President Dr. Steve Thomas said. Quote, part of Midland College's mission is to focus and improve quality of place, and that is exactly what this program does. Provide an opportunity for youth to develop leadership skills in order to serve our community and beyond, end quote. During the workshop, students participate in presentations and discussions with community leaders from education, government, and business. The students also participate in a persuasive speech contest, and one student receives the chance to attend the Four-Star Leadership Institute in Oklahoma. Sophie Sherram was this year's four-star winner. Quote, participating in this program was the best decision I made this summer, as it allowed me to grow in ways that I never believed were possible, end quote, Sherram said. Quote, I cannot even begin to share everything I learned through this program, but perhaps what impacted me the most is that I learned true leaders are willing to sacrifice their own comfort for the sake of others. I now have a better understanding of what it means to be a leader, and I will apply this knowledge to benefit my community as best as I can going forward, end quote. During the Four-Star Leadership Institute, Sherram received an additional $2,500 in scholarships, winning honorable mention for her workbook and serving on the winning team for the Ethics Bowl. She plans to apply to several colleges, including the University of Texas at Austin, Rice University, Dartmouth College, and Harvard University. She will pursue a degree in computer science and hopes to become a software engineer. Sophie is a member of the Trinity Varsity volleyball and track teams and enjoys playing the piano, performing in musicals, and participating in band and choir. McNair Grant for Graduate Students Reauthorized for SRSU Program. The McNair Postbaccalaureate Achievement Program grant at Sol Ross State University has been reauthorized in the amount of $261,888, according to an announcement from the Office of U.S. Senator John Cornyn. According to the announcement, funds are awarded through competition to institutions of higher education to prepare eligible participants for doctoral studies through involvement in research and other scholarly activities. Participants are from disadvantaged backgrounds and have demonstrated strong academic potential. Institutions work closely with participants as they complete their undergraduate requirements and encourage participants to enroll in graduate programs. Progress is tracked through the successful completion of advanced degrees. The goal, said the announcement, is to increase the attainment of PhD degrees by students from underrepresented segments of society. Local news roundup. $17,000 seized a game room. Odessa Police Department officers recently seized more than $17,000 from a game room, and the Ector County District Attorney's Office believes the money should be forfeited, alleging the money is tied to illegal gambling. According to online Ector County District Court records, undercover detectives went into the Stack game room on East Highway 80 August 1st, and one of them accrued credits while playing a video game machine. Employees Jocelyn Reyes Robles and Jenalissa Perez separately paid the detective in cash in violation of the law, records stated. The detectives then obtained a search warrant for the business and seized $17,546 and numerous gambling device circuit boards. According to court documents, arrest warrants were issued for Perez and Robles for engaging in organized criminal activity, a state jail felony. The Ector County District Attorney's Office had asked a judge to force Perez, Robles, game room employee Sonia Portillo, and game room owner Ernst Prado to forfeit the cash, stating it was, quote, derived from and or is proceeds gained from the commission of a gambling offense, end quote. Strip search leads to cash seizure. A strip search at the Ector County Jail didn't turn out well for an Odessa man who now faces a felony drug charge and is in danger of losing nearly $2,400 to the authorities. According to online Ector County District Court records, an Odessa police officer pulled David Alonzo Garcia, 33, over on July 29th for making an unsafe lane change near West 42nd Street and Northwest Loop 338. The officer recognized Garcia because of prior drug arrests, and when he asked him if he had any illegal drugs on him, Garcia admitted he had a small bag of marijuana with him. When Garcia was taken to the jail, he fought jailers in the showroom where strip searches are performed, and they found 22.8 grams of oxycodone hydrochloride 30 milligram pills in his rectum, court records state. Quote, officers know that these pills contain fentanyl, a powerful drug that has caused multiple deaths in the city of Odessa and throughout the U.S. in children and adults, end quote, the officer wrote in his report. Garza was booked on suspicion of manufacturing slash delivering of a controlled substance, prohibited substance in a correctional facility, and possession of marijuana. Garza also had a large number of $20 and $100 bills on him, court records state. A search of his cell phone revealed messages with Garza referring to the distribution of narcotics. According to court documents, the Ector County Attorney's Office has asked a judge to force Garza to forfeit $2,376, believing it to be the proceeds of a felony crime. Undercover cops make prostitution arrest. A 59-year-old woman was arrested last week on suspicion of prostitution. According to an Odessa Police Department report released Thursday, when undercover officers went to a East 52nd Street business last week to conduct an investigation, Suhuan Wang agreed to perform a sex act on one of them for money. The officer gave her $200 and arrested her after she led him to a secluded room and told him to take off his clothes. According to Google, Beijing Massage is associated with the address provided in the police report. Wang, who was also charged with prostitution in April, was released from the Ector County Jail after posting a $500 surety bond. Earlier this week, OPD released a report revealing undercover officers arrested Ting Seng Kufara, 61, on a prostitution charge the same night they arrested Wang. Sanfu Farah is accused of agreeing to perform a sex act for money at a business in the 700 block of West County Road. The name of that business could not be determined.
Hello, this is Michael reading an additional local article from the Odessa American, Friday, August 12th. County Wants Legal In on Game Room Issue by Kim Smith. At least some members of the Ector County Commissioners Court are intrigued by the City of Odessa's proposed plan to slowly eliminate game rooms and plan to seek legal counsel as to whether they should follow suit. On Tuesday night, the City Council directed its legal staff to draft an ordinance stating the city will no longer provide business permits to game rooms within the city limits. The ordinance will also specify game rooms that existing game room business permits will not be renewed on their expiration date. The council was told a similar ordinance was passed in Pecos 4 years ago. There are nearly 30 game rooms within the city limits and roughly 35 in unincorporated Ector County. Council members have indicated they are receiving a lot of complaints from constituents who believe the game rooms are unsightly and attract criminals. In addition, undercover Odessa Police Department operations have resulted in numerous arrests for illegal gambling. Odessa Police Chief Mike Gerke and Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths have both said bars create more calls for service than game rooms, but acknowledge at least some of the game rooms routinely violate Texas state laws prohibiting game rooms from awarding prizes valued at more than $5. Undercover OPD officers have seized at least $50,000 from game rooms within the last 8 weeks, alleging the money was tied to illegal gambling. The Ector County District Attorney's Office has filed court documents asking judges to force the game room owners to forfeit the money. Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes said she'd have to take several steps before suggesting a similar ordinance change within Ector County. However, Hayes said the county may have to take some action because the city's game rooms may try to migrate into the county. While I'm not in favor of it or opposed, I would need to get a visit with the county judge in Pecos, look at what the repercussions would be on the lawsuit side because that costs taxpayers money. Then if it does pass the city, then that means the county would have to address it because it would create issues outside the city limits for our county, the residents, and for the sheriff, Hayes said. While the council members said they've been fielding a lot of complaints about game rooms, Hayes said she only gets calls about them every now and then. Most county residents are more concerned about water issues, illegal dumping, and road conditions, she said. Precinct 1 Commissioner Mike Gardner said the city's idea makes sense to him. That was always the kind of way I thought it ought to work, because if you didn't want to do them, just don't renew the permits or issue any more permits. Seems simple to me, but I don't have a law degree, so we'll just have to have a look at it and see, Gardner said. I'm not opposed to eventually making them go away, for sure. The majority of the people he speaks to are against the game rooms, Gardner said. Personally, he also thinks some of the game rooms are engaged in illegal activity. I'm not saying all of them are this way, but there are some that just flat break the law and do what they want to do, and the fines that they pay are inconsequential to the amount of money they make. So, man, if you can pay a $1,000 fine and turn around and make 20 times that, who cares about a fine? Gardner said. Precinct 4 Commissioner Armando Rodriguez said he believes municipalities have more latitude when it comes to ordinances than counties, but he is interested in hearing what the county's lawyers have to say. Ector County Attorney Lee McClendon did not return a message seeking comment. He tries to talk constituents into avoiding game rooms, but the problem is there aren't many entertainment alternatives for older residents, Rodriguez said. Precinct 3 Commissioner Don Stringer said he has mixed feelings. I'm kind of on the fence when it comes to game rooms. I'm a real estate agent by profession, and these game rooms are helping several of my friends rent buildings that are not otherwise rentable, Stringer said. If game rooms operate within the law, he sees no reason to shut them down, but he knows not all of them do, Stringer said. So far, the county has done what it can by enacting stringent policies, he said. Precinct 2 Commissioner Greg Simmons said he's not a big fan of game rooms, but he'd like to hear what McClendon has to say. I think sometimes you got to be careful not to target an entire industry. but I'm assuming the city has gone through their legal counsel and feels like that's an acceptable way to handle it, Simmons said. I would want to double-check our side before we would be a part of that. Most people who complain about game rooms are upset about the sheer number of them, Simmons said. Ector County Judge-elect Dustin Fawcett said if the county can legally prohibit game rooms, he's in favor of doing just that. I'm concerned about the human trafficking that's linked with these facilities and the drug trafficking that's been linked with these facilities, so we need to be strong in how we deal with them, Fawcett said. Fawcett said he had not heard about human and drug trafficking being tied specifically to local game rooms, but he has heard about incidents statewide. I think that we're one of the top regions in Texas, if not the top region in Texas, for human trafficking. And if this is playing even the smallest part of it, we need to take a strong stance on it in Ector County and make sure that's not something that's happening here, he said.
New show to highlight kindness of West Texas. For Brandi Bell, kindness is in short supply in today's world. However, with her new television show set to air later this month, the longtime Midland resident is hoping to show how kind and generous people throughout West Texas can be. On August 25th, a new show called Keeping Good Company will air on K-West TV, Channel 9. The show will be a new hospitality and design television show with a home base of Little Teeny Farm in Midland and filmed throughout West Texas. The episodes will air each Thursday at 1 p.m. on Thursdays bi-weekly and on YouTube in the evenings. Quote, it's an afternoon show because it is hospitality and design, but it will also hit YouTube, the full episodes every evening at 7:57 p.m., end quote, Bell said. Quote, a lot of people aren't going to get to watch it during the day, so I think the majority of our viewers will be streaming, and we're doing a big push for streaming. We'll do quite a bit of advertising through the streaming because that's how we're going to reach the larger scale, but locally, Channel 9. It's been fun working with them. They have a hard-working community. It's been a fun partnership, end quote. The show is produced and hosted by Bell, who has lived in the Tall City for more than 20 years. The main focus of the show is community involvement, portraying the giving heart of West Texas people and values while entertaining viewers with DIY projects, hospitality inspiration, gardening tips, party planning, cooking and baking, travel and more. Quote, right now our country isn't very kind to each other and we have to make kindness louder, and I think this show is a good vehicle to do that, end quote, Bell said. Quote, people believed in it. Now that we're seeing this show happening and lives changing, it just strengthens our resolve to make sure it happens, end quote. The first season of the show began filming back in January this year and wrapped up in March. However, for Bell, the show has been a project that has nearly lasted 3 years. After getting started in late 2019, she made two pilots in 2020 before the show was picked up. For Bell and everyone who's worked on the show, getting to soon finally see the finished product air will be rewarding. In celebration of the series premiere, there's been a 24-day launch across several West Texas cities that are included in the new show. Quote, you know, sometimes when you're producing the content and making the show, you're in a little bit of a bubble with your team, end quote, Bell said. Quote, so we're ready to get out with people again. When you're filming, you're with people all the time and it's a lot of fun. Then you go into post-production and for months we're all in these little rooms. We're doing music, we're editing. I'm personally excited to get back out with all the people again and share our heart with the people that it matters most with, and that's West Texas. We want the whole country to enjoy this show, but we want the community here in West Texas to know that we're doing it for them as well. It's a big deal, end quote. Each episode, which will run in the fall before the end of the season, will feature a mix of creative elements and then tie everything together with a fun and sometimes emotional, quote, give back, end quote, in the local community. The simple message calls for everyone to love their neighbor and inspire kindness. Quote, it's a bit of a hybrid show, end quote, Bell said. Quote, the actual show model doesn't exist on television, so it's a little different. It's more of a hospitality, travel, design type hybrid, which means we're showcasing hospitality and we're incorporating decorating and design. We're also traveling. The whole point of that is making connections and serving others. We're using hospitality, we're using design, we're using travel aspect. The end result is just loving others and being good neighbors and finding out how we can be good members of our community, end quote. Some of the good deeds the show featured in season one included helping a single mother do what's needed to clean and redo her house. Another one featured a front porch refresh of a retired fire chief's house in Monahans. Quote, we had a toy drive for an adoption agency, end quote, Bell said. quote, we had dinner parties. Each episode is a culmination and an ending celebration. How do we come together and do that to benefit someone else? Episode one is our dog parade. We gathered food for local advocacy programs. There's always some party and after services, end quote. Bell says they want to highlight people doing the work and being involved in the community. Quote, this isn't about our team going out and doing good things, end quote, Bell said. Quote, we want to give back also, but we're also highlighting people who are doing things like first responders and people doing nonprofit work. We have our Good Neighbor Award, and we ask people to email us and tell us about someone in your community that's a good neighbor, end quote. Those who want to recognize a good neighbor can do so at Keeping Good's website at https://www.watchkeepinggoodco.com/the-show. Quote, we can highlight individuals, end quote, Bell said. Quote, they don't have to own a nonprofit or be employed in service. It can just be normal everyday citizens loving each other. That's something we're trying to highlight towards the end of the season. We have to get the word out in the first few episodes, but the last few episodes of the season, we will highlight good neighbors. We need people to write to us and tell us who's a good neighbor in their community, end quote. The season one finale will air on December 1st. Operations manager Tori Pearson is also eager to see the show air. Quote, we're so excited, end quote, Pearson said. Quote, it has been a long time coming. We're getting ready to air. Our Texas tour is leading up to the series premiere, and I cannot wait for everyone to see the episode and what we've been working on for so long. We've done preview parties with our pilot, but no one's seen anything from season one, and I just think the community's going to love it. It highlights West Texas so much, and I really hope that we can help people have a newfound appreciation for our West Texas community, end quote. Pearson was born and raised in West Texas, graduating from Lee High School in Midland before going to college at Texas Tech University in Lubbock, and is now back in Midland. Quote, it's really a special thing to have a hand in the narrative and getting to show West Texas in the best light possible and tell these people stories, end quote, Pearson said. Quote, there's so many incredible people doing great things, and I think the show highlights the good things that are already being done, and I'm excited for everyone to get to see that, end quote. For more information about Keeping Good Company, go to https://tinyurl.com/mr429v8d. Stateline Band going strong after 19 years. During the last 19 years, the Stateline Band has gone from a group that could only practice in an old barn to opening for Roger Kramer and Rick Trevino to recently producing a top 10 single and winning an award. Patrick Quain, who is the drummer as well as the original founder of the group, knows just how far the Midland-based band has come. Quote, it's great just how much the Lord has blessed us, end quote, Quain said. Quote, from having to practice in a barn that was either freezing cold or burning hot, to being in the same room as all the Texas country music guys and being nominated for anything was unbelievable, end quote. Now, the Stateline Band performs an average up to 80 to 90 gigs a year, traveling all over the Southwest. One of those gigs will be at 8 p.m. August 20th at The Destination in Midland. The Stateline Band merges honky-tonk with a, quote, rock and roll edge, end quote, to create their self-proclaimed genre, Texas Dance Hall Country. The band is composed of lead singer Jody Dominguez, producer and fiddle player and vocalist Hayden Vitera, bassist Scott Zajicek, guitarist Steve Anderson, and steel guitarist Stan Scantling. Quain started the band in 2003 with a group of friends, including David Houston and Stan Williamson. Quote, the three of us got together and hired a bass player and a lead guitar player, and we started the band in 2003, end quote, Quain said. Quote, over those years, we played a few small gigs, end quote. Their first gig was at a bar called Your Place in Midland, mostly just performing to have fun and singing covers. Quote, we would play 6 or 7 gigs a year, and we did it for fun, and we had delusions of grandeur, end quote, Quain said. Quote, that's where we started, in Midland and in David Houston's warehouse. We could practice 3 or 4 times a week and try to get a couple of songs together, enough to cover a 2-hour show, end quote. Over the years, the group would see members come and go, and it was one member who helped change the band style just a little bit. Quote, in 2011, we brought on Sergio Ojeda, and we changed from a honky-tonk two-step style of music to doing a Tex-Mex Slayer on every song that we did, end quote, Quain said. Quote, we did that from 2011 until 2016, end quote. Dominguez would join the band in 2016. Quote, I had just moved back to Midland in 2016 for work, end quote, Dominguez said. Quote, I had just gotten out there and got a call from Patrick. I didn't know who he was, and I had never heard of the State Line Band. At that time, I hadn't played music in quite a while, but he brought me in for an interview and a couple of songs, and he said I was in. We started getting really serious about it and getting really good. We've been going at it ever since. We went from playing in a barn in Midland to cutting songs with George Strait's players. It's been a lot of fun, end quote. Quain remembers the first gig the band performed after bringing Dominguez in. Quote, we were opening for Roger Krieger, and that was in 2 months, end quote, Quain said. Quote, Jody had just walked on with us. It was all brand new players. We didn't know what we were going to do. We only had an hour's worth of music, so we put as much music together as we could. We got them as close to the record as we possibly could. At that time, the band still didn't have any original music. It was all just covers, end quote, Dominguez said. Quote, we got nervous and we opened for Roger. It was okay. No major train wrecks on stage. We got through it, end quote. Quain said Ojeda would soon leave the band due to work and family matters. Quote, we were starting to get pretty heavy, and it was too much time away from family, end quote, Quain said. Quote, we went after one of our big-name players now, end quote. That member would be Viterra, who had been on tour with Trevino. The group met up with Viterra while opening for Trevino in San Angelo in 2017. Viterra would eventually join, and it wasn't long before Quain said the band started getting serious. Quote, we started working and learning how to read music charts and learning Nashville signatures, end quote, Quain said. In 2020, the band made their first top 10 single, quote, Full-Time Fool, end quote, peak at number 4. A year later, they won New Group / Duo of the Year at the T3R Texas Regional Radio Report Awards. The band continues to consistently perform across the state while opening for country music household names including Mark Chestnut, Josh Turner, Pat Green, and Aaron Watson. So far, they currently have 3 singles with their 4th, quote, Dance Hall Devil, end quote, currently climbing the Texas charts. Next week, the group will release its new single, written by Dominguez, called, quote, Lonely, end quote. Quote, we're excited about everything to come, end quote, Quain said. Quote, it's really good. I think Dominguez wrote a top 5 song. I think this is the song that will go all the way, end quote. The song centers around a musician who's on the road and the hardships of being away from family. Quote, he's alone but not lonely, end quote, Quain said. Quote, he's got a lot of people around him playing at shows, but he's still alone. It's a cool song, end quote. Dominguez said the lyrics came to him while he was going through a marital split. Quote, at the time, I was going through a divorce and was getting over that, end quote, Dominguez said. Quote, being on the road, I lived out in Midland at the time, and after the divorce, I went from a house full of people and kids to zero. I just had this thought one night where we were playing music, and the thought was, I'm alone but not lonely, came to me, end quote. Dominguez said he wrote the song in about 30 minutes and recorded it on his computer so he wouldn't forget it. Quote, there's a line in there called, quote, Lord, hear my prayer, they know their daddy can't be there, so guide me across Texas tonight, end quote, Dominguez said. Quote, so basically, all the stuff that I'm doing, I can't wait to turn around and get the kids and spend time with them and get away from it all while appreciating the fact that I can still do this. It's kind of thanking the crowd that comes out to see us, but also letting them know that I'm a dad too and that I need time to be a dad to my kids, end quote. The song is a change in style from what the group has usually done. Quote, it's a little bit different, end quote, Quain said. Quote, it kind of strays from what we've always done. We've usually done hardcore 90s-driven honky-tonk. This is certainly a different style. All the other ones were fun-loving beer joint style. This one has some meaning to it. We're pretty excited about it, end quote. The group is also excited for next week's show in Midland. Quote, the destination, they go above and beyond in helping promote us and following us, end quote, Quain said. Quote, they voted for us, and the voting process isn't easy. They go above and beyond in promoting the band. Even if it's a competing place, they go on and on about us. They're just a class act. They're super involved in the music, and that makes it fun to play there, end quote. As far as the future of the band, Dominguez says they're going to continue to work hard. But we're going to keep going with it, and we're not going to change what we do or who we are, end quote, Dominguez said. Quote, it's truly a band. It's not about the lead singer or one person, end quote. Quain says the ultimate goal is to continue to play and to perform in sold-out venues. Quote, from the time I was a kid and got my first drum set, my goal was to play in front of a sold-out stadium. That's what we want to do, end quote, Quain said. Quote, all the record stuff will come with that. We're going to continue working hard and making music and staying true to country music. No, not straying off. We're not going the bro country route. We're going to stay a dance hall band, and if that gets us into some sold-out arena, then that's where our goal is, end quote. For more information about the State Line Band, visit https://tinyurl.com/y3xjfcvd.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.